Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is Internet Marketing. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 182 of Internet Marketing, brought to you by Site Visibility. Hello, Kelvin.
Hello, Andy.
Well, how are you? It's been a bit of a while.
Yeah, no, it's all right. Yeah, I mean, it's good. Yeah, I mean, we recorded a huge batch of beginner's guides not so long ago, and we've been scheduling those out over the last couple of weeks, and hopefully they've been hitting a good chord with people who perhaps are relatively new to internet marketing. And what I kind of wanted to continue on that theme today, really, to a certain extent, and kind of talk a bit about kind of content marketing, which is kind of something that's sort of been around for various... for a number of years and various guises and various kind of approaches that people have been using, but really seems to, over the last sort of 6 months or so, really have struck a chord and really become something that a lot more people are talking about in the way they promote a business online.
Now, content marketing, Kelvin, yeah. Sounds quite generic. What do we mean by content marketing?
Well, I mean, I suppose to kind of sort of set the scene a bit, I suppose I'll give you sort of like a short history of link building, right? So kind of the logic goes that it used to be very easy and then Google Penguin came along and it became quite hard. Right, that's basically the sort of like the history of link building was sort of, you know, envisaged, and now it's a lot more difficult to get genuine editorial links which are going to add some value to your site. That's simply not the case. It's always been hard, but there were kind of a lot more sort of shortcuts in the past that people used. So there were kind of ways that we all really implicitly understood perhaps weren't really doing what the search engines wanted us to do, but they were effective, so people still did them. I mean, a prime example of that sort of thing would be things like article spinning, where someone would write one article and they'd probably not pay anyone a huge amount of money to write that article in the first place, and then what they'd do is they'd kind of run that through a machine to kind of take that one simple article that they paid about, I don't know, $5 for, and try and generate like 100 odd variations of it using software, and then syndicate that as wide as they possibly could on websites that would only take that content because there was either some commercial relationship, so effectively they were paying for that content to be syndicated, or in some kind of weird co-op where you allowed other people to get links so you could get links in return and all that stuff.
Yes, but those days have gone now, haven't they? Really?
Yeah, I mean, they're not really that, you know, I don't know whether they were ever...
Sort of gone.
Yeah, whether they were ever that effective. But certainly, they're a lot less popular now, and, you know, they are... a lot less kind of effective. And I mean, to kind of use a metaphor to kind of explain how it used to, you know, used to work, was kind of the logic was that you didn't necessarily have to get a lot of great links to be successful. You could kind of rely on, if I to use a metaphor, kind of pennies and pounds, really, right? So if you imagine that 100 pennies in the UK is equal to a pound, right? And although the shopkeeper might not like you if you turn up and buy something for a pound with 100 pennies, they were essentially the same, right? And the tactic that most people took was, rather than getting more and more pound coins, they were just going to get, okay, how can I get more and more pennies because it'll equal the same. Now, effectively, what Penguin has done is, you know, and Google with their Penguin update have done, is to try and kind of make it more like a penny doesn't equal a hundredth of a pound. It might equal 200th of a pound or a thousandth of a pound. And suddenly those tactics that you were using to get those pennies isn't really going to work anymore. And, you know, content marketing is really kind of all about getting those good quality links, which are those pound coins, if you can continue the analogy. That's probably a bit laboured and didn't really quite work there, but hopefully that's kind of giving you a sense of what I'm getting at. Now, it's kind of a question that always gets asked when I'm kind of talking about content marketing. It's like, okay, well, you say part of the reason you're doing this is to get traffic, and part of the reason you're doing this is to get good links, which will help you in the search engines. But the question is, well, what's a good link, really. And an idea I've been thinking about and talking about more recently with our clients and our team is kind of the idea of a kind of a proximity to ideal. And if you kind of imagine like a bell graph of the distribution of the quality of your links, if you imagine kind of Wikipedia as being the ideal, right? And their distribution of quality and variety of links and number of domains and the anchor text is kind of very normal, right? But most SEO websites don't have that kind of normal distribution. They've got some disproportionately high spikes in areas where they shouldn't do. So perhaps that's, you know, their volume of links, they have lots and lots and lots from low quality, or they have lots and lots and lots with one or two particular keywords.
So the bell graph is like skewed one end or the other.
Rather than being kind of distributed in the middle there. So that, you know, that kind of works better when I'm kind of explaining this visually, but to sort of give you a sense of what a good link is, a good link should look like, you know, your distribution, your link portfolio should look normal, right? So it's like a normally linked to website rather than perhaps looking like a website that's been SEO'd. There's also kind of this idea of the random surfer model, which is, I won't go into the details here, and I don't, you know, it's a pattern that's been kind of shared by Google that, you know, that they've applied for.
This isn't an SEO expert that goes down to the beach at random time surfing.
No. Right, so okay. To kind of put it relatively simply, the idea is that Google potentially could understand the value of a link on the page based on the likelihood of a random surfer who appears on that page clicking through to that link. Mm. So the logic of that is that, like, an editorial link within the body is perhaps more valuable on that page than a link from the footer, or a link, you know, or one that's kind of hidden away, you know. It's kind of about the relative value of a link within a page. And more often than not, the links that SEOs are building, no one who visits that page that's providing that link would ever click that link. So again, a good link is one that was going to send traffic. And ultimately, a good link is one that, you know, an SEO probably wouldn't build, right? Because it's, you know, it's maybe saying to read more about, and that's the anchor text, and it's kind of within an article that's got 17 other links because there's lots of references in there. You see what I mean? It's often what we look for as an SEO in a link isn't actually really the ones that are going to have the most value going forward and at the moment. And ultimately, the kind of good links are ones that you don't feel embarrassed by, right? So if you can, you know, as a SEO working for an agency and you've built this link, you should feel comfortable talking to that, to your client about those links. Or if you're working in-house and your boss says, what new links have you got on your SEO campaign? If they're ones where it's kind of best-directory-free-india-pr9.net, you're going to be embarrassed by those and you're never going to want to show them. And probably if you have been building those links, you kind of try and keep it secret, the links that you've been building, right? Because your logic is, well, I won't show you what goes into the sausages just taste nice. Well, now people want to know what those ingredients are. So that's kind of, you know, my bits about, you know, the idea of link building. But to kind of talk about a process for content marketing, right? So the problem that too often comes up when people are talking about content marketing is they'll say, SEO has changed, link building is dead. What you need is a great brand and great content, and that's the extent of their advice. Like somehow producing great content, all you need to know is that you need to do it.
Well, this goes along with content is king, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's like, well, amazing, we know that. So how am I going to do anything about that? How am I going to produce content that's going to get me attention and links? Well, I wanted to share a process that we've used a bit at Site Visibility for kind of our link building and also kind of more of our, you know, content driven social marketing campaigns. And at Site Visibility, we love an acronym. We've talked about this a few times in the past on the podcast, but I think it's worth revisiting. And that's the idea of a theme strategy, we call it. So
T-H-E-M-E.
Yeah. So essentially that stands for five things that we do to go through a process of building great content. Now, this works for all sectors, all campaigns, and it's kind of just a framework and a way of thinking, a way of going about content marketing that hopefully takes us from the place where it's, I know I need to build good content, and maybe you've got some ideas of some good content, but kind of connecting the dots between the two there and helping you move along that process. So the first of those, you know, an acronym, the T in the theme is for tribes. This is kind of a reference to Seth Godin, who you all know we're a bit of a fan of on the podcast. But essentially that's about kind of audience development, right? Or audience segments. So that's kind of trying to understand particular subgroups of people who have the potential to link to your site. And it's worth just making the distinction here that when we're doing this to build links, it's often different from social, right? So an example I always use for this is, we've done some work in the past for job boards, right? And one of the tribes for a job board is university careers departments. Mm. Because they have the power to link, they work for authoritative websites, they're able to send traffic through. But those university careers advisors aren't customers of the job board, right? They're not going to apply for those jobs. So sometimes tribes aren't customers, but a lot of the time, a lot of the time they are, right?
They're just people that might want to come to your site for one reason or another.
Yeah. And often there's kind of a big overlap, right? So that, you know, the people who are customers are probably also the people who have the ability to link. But it's worth thinking about that. And for those tribes, you need to understand them, right? So you need to know what kind of websites they visit, what types of content they like. And you can do kind of like persona development, where it's a kind of, we sometimes like find a picture, talk about their background, talk about their demographics, talk about some of their favourite websites and that type of thing. That can be helpful. So that's your first step. And you need like a few of these tribes, because different, you want different links from different sorts of websites. You then need your H in your theme strategy, which is for a hook, right? So that is what's compelling about your business to that group of people. And it's a bit like a unique selling proposition, unique selling point, you know, point of differentiation. But there's got to be something compelling about your business to that tribe. Now, that's sometimes where it can go wrong. So say we were working on a job board, you know, to use my analogy there and continue that. And we've gone, okay, a great people we would really like links from is University Career Services. Brilliant. They're our tribe. We kind of develop them. We understand what interests them. Oh, we don't have any graduate jobs. So therefore, you've not got a hook for that tribe. So that tribe is, you've got to write that off, because there's nothing about your, why would they link to your business? Because they, you know, they can't do that.
So Kelvin, are hooks specific to tribes? So does,
definitely,
they link to each tribe?
Okay. Yeah. So that, well, that's the way that we work anyway. Yeah. So it's a kind of, you know, that each hook is compelling to that audience. So I'll go through a live example in a minute for a theme strategy that I've kind of used. But yeah, it's kind of, the hook is connected to a tribe. So you can have like multiple theme strategies running simultaneously. It's only then you then go about producing your engaging content, right? Because too often people go, oh yeah, I've got this great idea for a bit of link bait, and they haven't done those first couple of steps. And I found that if you know exactly who it is you want to link to you before you start the content, you're going to be more successful. If you know why they want to link to you, you're going to be more successful. And then you produce the engaging piece of content. And when I say content, I don't just mean written content. I mean video, I mean podcasts, I mean screencasts, I mean white papers, I mean ebooks, I mean, you know,
infographics. Is it better to have a big spread of different types of
media? Again, it sort of, like, it cuts back to the tribes. And, you know, do, you know, are people in your sector more likely to link to, you know, are people in those tribes more likely to link to visual content than audio content? Or do they link to a lot of audio content? Or is there lots of people already producing written text content? So actually, I'd be more likely to be seen as unusual and stand out by doing video. Mm. You know, you can do that sort of thing. So, yeah, I certainly think that a big challenge in content marketing is standing out. And by doing something in a different media or medium is one good way of standing out. And I mean, you know, the podcast is a prime example of that. And the podcast has been really, really successful for us, because most people don't, you know, there's not as much, there's thousands upon thousands upon thousands of, you know, SEO and digital marketing blogs. There's a couple of dozen of, you know, decent regular marketing podcasts. And we've been able to rise to the top of that because there's less, you know, we try and do a really good job at it, but it's easier, and you get disproportionate rewards, don't you, by being like one of the top ones.
Yeah.
You know, rather than, you know, it's best to be one or two best internet marketing podcasts on you know, in iTunes than the 150th best marketing blog. You know, there's not a huge amount of reward for being 250th best SEO blog. You know, so yeah, kind of think about that in terms of what everyone.
It's almost like being if the pool of fish is smaller, it's easier to get near the top, isn't it?
Exactly that. And yeah, I mean, and this engaging content, it's much easier to produce if you understand the who you want to link to you, what's compelling about your business, and that piece of engaging content has to come kind of appeal to that tribe and sort of exemplify that hook, right? And this is a little bit easy to understand when I go through the example, but yeah, that's then you know, I won't diminish this stage of kind of producing.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Content, but if you've done those two steps previous, it's much easier. Then after that, you kind of need some marketing. And again, this is where we've seen quite a lot of this recently, where people have kind of got the whole idea of content marketing. They've produced something amazing, but then not marketed it. So like we've had like people who have produced some amazing sort of widgets, right, where you can put in information and it'll spit information back out to you that's unique and personal to you, that's really compelling, right? And that's the sort of stuff that ought to get loads and loads of links. But they've built it, bunged it in a hidden away corner of their website, and that's it, right? You need outreach approaches. You need to maybe buy some pay-per-click advertising to do it. You need to be having a guest posting strategy to promote your engaging content that you've got, and you really need that marketing program.
So these are sort of active outreaching type activities.
Yeah,
that you're talking about.
And effectively every piece of content that you produce should have a marketing plan for it. And you know, if that piece of content is a 140 character tweet, the marketing campaign is not going to be the same as a 40,000 word ebook. But you do need to think about, okay, so when I'm producing my tweet, well, what can I do to increase the likelihood of that tweet being seen, right? And that, you know, you'll be doing that implicitly. Like, you'll be going, okay, well, I'll try and say it at the right time of day, or I'll actually try and go, okay, well, can I include a hashtag so someone's more likely to spot it, or can I at message someone in that who I think potentially would also find that interesting and therefore they're more likely to share it. You're doing that type of marketing anyway, but are you doing that for every blog post you write, or every podcast you produce, or every infographic that you produce? Maybe you're contacting two or three people, but have you done a couple of hours of research of people who you think would find it interesting? Have you contacted them over a series of weeks and built up a rapport and relationship with them to then mention the fact that you're, sharing this content? So you need that marketing. And then to finish off, you need to evaluate
it. Final E of theme.
To evaluate it. And that's kind of the same with any marketing model. You need to step back and kind of say, was that successful? Was that not successful? With the successful ones, how can I do more of that? With the unsuccessful ones, why was it unsuccessful, and why can I? How can I do it differently? So, to use a live example of this, right? So, we recently produced, if you're in the UK and work in SEO, I definitely recommend you checking this out, the Brighton SEO Salary Survey. And to many extents, this is sort of a pretty good example of a theme strategy. It's not one for a client, but whenever we use client ones, it's a little bit more complicated to get clearance and approval. So, I wanted to use one that I can tell you all the details on. So, we produced a salary survey for Brighton SEO. Now, our tribes was quite simple, right? So we understood that there is a world of people who are working in SEO agencies whose job is to... it's exactly the same as site visibility. You would say, hey, member of the team, we really need you to write a blog post this month for us for our site visibility blog. Can you write us something? And often, they won't necessarily have anything that struck them as something to write about. So our tribe is this... SEO agency workers who have to try and find something interesting to write about on their blog. They're potentially, struggling for that. They don't want to write something that lots of people have written about before, but equally they don't want to have to start something from scratch. They want to make it easy for themselves to produce this content. And that kind of, we had those people in mind, right? These people who are writing about SEO for agencies, want something interesting, want something compelling, but don't want to have to spend hours researching something. And then we had our hook. Well, what was compelling about the Brighton SEO website that was unique to them? Well, we've got this job board, right? And we've got this relationship with, 3,000 or 4,000 SEOs in the UK who, fortunately over the series of events that we've built up, trust us, right? So we've got this relationship and, we can get information out of them, right? So we were able to ask, you know, I think it was about 300 we surveyed in the end. How many years have you been working? What's your job title? Where in the country do you work? How much do you get paid, right? So we then produced sort of an infographic. So that was our engaging piece of content. But our hook was we had that relationship. We had access to that group of people to get that. And so we did the survey and that became the hook. And then the engaging content was the infographic that we built around that, that had kind of where are the best cities to work in the UK if you want to work in SEO. You know, are you better off working in-house than in an agency? And do certain, you know, all kinds of bits of information along those lines. Exactly. So that was our engaging piece of content. And, you know, that wasn't a small task. We had, you know, a number of people involved in turning that into a pretty shareable, well-designed thing. But it was all from that stage of understanding, well, why are people going to link to us? They're looking for content for their blog. What have we got? We've got a relationship. We've got access to this data that we can do. And then we produced the engaging content. And it was an infographic for this. But, you know, equally, we could have done a video with the survey results, or we could have done some press releases. In fact, we did a few press releases. We could have done an interactive infographic, or we could have done a widget, right, that said, put in, you know, we've got this data. I could then ask people a couple of questions. Where do you work? What's your job title? How many years experience you've got? And ping, it gives them what their salary could be, right? You know, and that, you know, there's different angles, so you can produce lots of bits of engaging content potentially off the same tribe and hook. So that's how we did that. How did we market it? Well, we didn't go crazy on this, right? Because, you know, it's not, to be honest, Brighton SEO as a business isn't one that's driven by search traffic. It's driven by word of mouth and email marketing. And that's kind of how we promoted the white paper, right? So we've got 3,700 or whatnot email addresses of people who are interested in SEO in the UK. So I knew that I could send an email out to them saying, here is a salary survey. And because the content was compelling enough that it was going to do pretty well off the back of that. And yeah, of course it did. But, you know, that was our marketing plan. And it was a simple one. It was an email one. And that kind of goes back to a lot of the stuff about building a list being a good thing. Having your own list of people is good. But equally, you know, we could have pushed it through social media. We could have done outreach. We could have done press releases. We could have done advertising. But we had a marketing plan for it to do that. And the evaluation, this is the heads up here. I didn't do as much of that as I should have done, but we know it did well. It got, you know, it's the most tweeted page on the Brighton SEO site of any of the pages that we've got on there. We know that it's got links from some really reputable websites, but we didn't really do that numerically. So that was a flaw perhaps in this one, but that's inevitably a kind of a cobbler's shoe type situation. Whereas, you know, we don't perhaps spend as much attention on our own individual projects as we do some of our kind of client stuff. But what I then should do is kind of understand, okay, well, what did work about that? What didn't work well? How can I improve upon that? So perhaps lessons learnt there was the infographic was very good at showing some of the detailed complex relationships between like location and salary and in-house, but it didn't make it perhaps as easy to say, how am I underpaid, right? Which I think was probably what people were wanting from it. So the evaluation was, well, maybe we could have set it up in a slightly different way to have made that a little bit clear. Now, I think perhaps that might have ended up with headlines that didn't truly reflect the data, which probably in the long run wouldn't have been a good thing. But from a link building content marketing point of view, might have done us a favour. So, yeah, I mean, basically, a couple of like final pro tips, really, to increase the likelihood of your content marketing working really well. My first one is, try and involve, you know, so we talked about the tribes, potentially involve the people within those tribes in the process of producing the content. So to give you an example, say you're trying to get travel bloggers to link to your guide that you're producing to travel in New York. Now, you could just write an amazing travel guide to New York and then tell them about it. Potentially, there's also the other opportunity, which is, how about asking them some advice within that? Or if you're producing a podcast, rather than just you produce a podcast, get the people who you want to link to your content to participate and contribute to that podcast. Because then inevitably they've got an emotional attachment to it. They're therefore more likely to approve it as well. Also, kind of excellent isn't really enough anymore. There's loads and loads and loads of good content. There's quite a lot of excellent content online, but there's not a lot of kind of exceptional content, and it's really the exceptional content that gets you know, the most success and the most value from it. And it's that kind of disproportionate reward that you get at the end of producing something exceptional, when perhaps only needed a little bit more effort than excellent, But exceptional is really important as
it's
well.
It's a bit like the Olympics, isn't it? And the difference in the gold and silver is like a billionth of a second or something.
It's that kind of they call it about like accumulation of marginal gains, don't they? Mm. And my final one really is to kind of realise that with content marketing that not every piece of content that you produce is going to be hugely successful. And in fact, actually sometimes kind of investing heavily in just one or two ideas can be really, really risky, right? Because there's an inevitable risk in this process. And if you only do a couple of things, even if you invest very, very heavily in them, they might not work. So instead, I kind of think a venture capital kind of content creation policy or philosophy is a good idea, where it's a... You can tell
I dropped my wallet then.
the kind of what I'm trying to get at there is be prepared that you should take lots of small risks, but they should be risky, if you see what I mean. So rather than making one or two big, relatively safe bets, that's not the approach to take with content. Mm. You're much better off taking a large number of relatively small in terms of cost projects, but ones that you think if they do take off will do really, really well. And that's kind of how venture capital works, and that's an approach to take, I think, to your content production. And then it's kind of about agility as well, isn't it? It's kind of lean startup, agile lean startup, venture capital. It's all that kind of approach and way of thinking about business, I think, can be applied very well to content as well.
Good stuff. You're having a rest as he sits back. Yes. Has a rest. Have a drink, Kelvin. Have a drink. He's having a drink. I apologise for Kelvin's creaky chair, by the way.
It's adding character.
Kelvin's very animated when he talks.
I can't help myself. Can't sit still. I'm a fidgeter.
He does fidget.
But yeah, hopefully that's kind of given you a sense of kind of, okay, I know I probably ought to be doing content marketing, but what do I do next? Think about the theme methodology. So that's tribes. Who are your target linkers? Who are your target social sharers? Hook, what's compelling about your business to that group of people? Then you go and produce the engaging content. And when you're producing engaging content, don't just do text or blog posts. And then market it. So you need a campaign. You need some ideas about what's going to take that content and get it to people. It's not just a case of if you build it, they will come, right? You need a marketing plan. And then finally, and this is important and the one that a lot of people, myself included, sometimes forget, evaluate it and learn from what's worked and been successful in the past.
Fantastic stuff, Kelvin. So what's coming up in the next show?
Okay, next show I'm going to be talking about, and we've touched on this a little bit in the past, kind of behavioural economics, but I'm going to be talking about some of the kind of psychological tricks or, you know, ploys or approaches that businesses use to increase conversion rates, so through conversion rate optimisation. So I'm going to kind of talk about some particular examples and ones you can go off and look at their website. So because potentially it's like, okay, I know I ought to be testing my website to try and increase conversions, but what should I test? Well, hopefully this next podcast will give you some good examples of things you could test based upon businesses who we know are doing conversion rate optimization and are being quite successful at it, so you can kind of learn from their successes and their experiments that they've done in the past.
Good stuff. Okay, so we'll see you next time on Internet Marketing. So goodbye from me, Andy White,
and goodbye from me, Kelvin Newman.
See you next time. Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on the internet at www.internetmarketingpodcast.org, where you'll find show notes, links, and instructions on how to subscribe. We would absolutely love to get feedback, comments, and questions from you. If you want to send an email, send it to kelvin.newman@sitevisibility.com. Also, feel free to comment on the website. And if you'd like to use our voice line number, if you're outside of the UK, it's +44 1273 256 150. If you're inside the UK, it's 01273 256 150. And you can leave a voice comment or question and we'll play it on the show. Also, we would absolutely be delighted if you would give us a rating on iTunes itself. Well, that's it for now. Andy White is signing off until next week on Internet Marketing.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.